Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, March 12, 2014. One University of Khartoum student is killed and several others injured in a protest over aerial bombardments in Darfur.
Live ammunition had previously been used during protests in September 2013, killing upward of 150 protesters.
And no one has been arrested after intercommunal fighting in Lagos State over the weekend leaves 10 people dead.
I think it is too soon to arrest anyone, because what people are doing right now is see that they are separated so that they don't stay nearby.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A University of Khartoum student has been shot dead by security forces during a protest yesterday against the alleged government-sponsored violence in Darfur. More than 100 other protesters were reportedly arrested at the demonstration. Voice of America fellow May Abdul Nasir spoke with the organizer of the protest.
Ma'ali was shot in the back. According to the autopsy, the bullet went through under his shoulder blade and came out the other side. It ruptured his spinal cord and the upper part of his lung.
Muhammad Zain is the head of the Darfur Student Union at Khartoum University. Zain says the student who was killed was a Darfuri. The protest at the university was peaceful until security forces opened fire.
We stood in protest on Khartoum University campus to express our opinion and condemnation of what is happening in Darfur. In response to that, Darfuri students were targeted when the whole university was surrounded by the police and the security forces, and they used live ammunition against us.
Manar Idris of Amnesty International says this is not the first time security forces in Sudan have used excessive force against peaceful protesters.
Amnesty International has received reports from credible eyewitnesses that the security forces have used tear gas in yesterday's protest. We've also received reports that live ammunition was used to disperse protesters. Amnesty International has documented over the years the use of excessive force by Sudanese security services against mostly peaceful demonstrations. We've previously reported on police forces and security services using batons and tear gas and rubber bullets at close range against demonstrators. And also, live ammunition had previously been used during protests in September 2013, killing upward of 150 protesters.
Amnesty is calling on Sudan to stop the violent crackdowns on demonstrations. For VOA News, I am May Abdel Nasser.
Fresh violence broke out today at the funeral of Ali Abubakar. Reporter Ismail Kushkush tells Nabil Biajo the killing of the University of Khartoum student has sent shockwaves across the city. He says thousands of people took to the streets today calling for the removal of the Sudanese regime.
Riot police today broke out a protest that followed the funeral of a University of Khartoum student today who was shot dead yesterday on campus. Hundreds of protesters attended the funeral of Ali Abubakar, a third-year economics student from Darfur, who was shot yesterday on campus following a protest organized by Darfuri students who were protesting the recent escalation of violence in the region and the deteriorating humanitarian conditions there, which have led to the fleeing of over tens of thousands in that troubled region. Darfuri students accused students allied to the ruling National Congress Party of being responsible for the violence on campus, an allegation that NCP students denied. The Sudan police also denied involvement in the shooting of the students and said that it had fired tear gas but not live ammunition.
What triggered this particular protest yesterday?
This was organized by students from Darfur and many from the same places where the violence in these recent weeks has been taking place. Students wanted to take their protest out from the University of Khartoum and into the streets, and they were met by police and tear gas. Following that, there was an escalation of violence, according to the students, between the student activists and students allied with the ruling party. That led to beatings and further tear gas and the shooting of student Ali Abbakr in the chest.
As you said, the violence has continued since yesterday, and today we have seen reports and tweets that mourners at the funeral clashed with the riot police when they were chanting slogans, you know, calling for the fall of the government. Tell me a little bit about that.
Right. Thousands attend the funeral of the Ali Abbakr this morning at Al-Sahafa Cemetery in Khartoum. And after the funeral, students and activists led a protest calling for the removal of the regime, calling for an uprising, and they were met by tear gas from dozens of security that had surrounded the cemetery. I spoke to someone who had witnessed and was passing by that said that the scene was incredible and that activists and students started running into different alleys as soon as the tear gas was fired against them this morning.
That was in Al-Sahafa, like you said, and apparently the incident from yesterday sent anger waves across the capital. We heard that Khartoum University is now suspended, classes are suspended. How widespread is this reaction?
Classes have been suspended indefinitely at the University of Khartoum. We are hearing of protests at other campuses like Kulliyat al-Hadi, al-Mahdi, and al-Ahya University in Umm Durman. It's still not clear how widespread this is. The reaction is. It has the potential to become wider. People were very angry that live ammunition was used on the campus of the University of Khartoum, which, of course, historically has been a hotbed for activism and politics in the country.
That's reporter Ismail Kouchkouch speaking to VOA fellow Nabil Biadjo from Khartoum earlier today. Kouchkouch says the University of Khartoum and two other universities in the capital are closed. VOA attempted to speak with the Sudanese Minister of Information, but was unable to get response today. Lake State officials say 10 people were killed and a dozen more injured during intercommunal fighting over the weekend. They say the fighting started when young men traveling from one cattle camp to a nearby camp to see their girlfriends were mistaken for raiders. Philip Aleu has more for VOA from Juba.
State lawmaker for Rumbek North, Benjamin Lad Matho, says clashes started Saturday night when two young men from Gak cattle camp traveled to Manuer camp. He says armed men in the nearby camp started shooting when the visitors approached, killing one of them. Matho says relative of the dead men retaliated on Sunday.
Then they mobilized themselves and went in a big number to attack the cattle camp where the person was shot dead. From there, fighting happened and up to 10 people lost their lives from both sides.
Matho says more than 200 police officers were called in to stop the fighting. He says so far nobody has been arrested, though dozens of security officials remain in place.
I think it is too soon to arrest anyone, because what people are doing right now is see that they are separated so that they don't stay nearby. The issue of arresting people and maybe doing an investigation will follow when the situation is calmed down.
Matho blames the latest deadly clashes on heightened tensions in the communities. He says people fear anti-government forces in neighboring Unity State will raid their cattle.
So most of the time, they stay in huge numbers.
And in readiness to protect themselves and their livestock from any outside raiding. That is why they are in huge numbers, and that's why mobilization is very simple once there is such an incident.
Matho says there have been no reports of cattle raiding in Lakes Estate so far this year. For VOA News, I'm Philip Aleu in Juba.
The trial of four political detainees accused of trying to overthrow the government has been adjourned until March 19. The presiding judge in the case has requested that seven political detainees released last month into the custody of the Kenyan government appear in Juba when the trial resumes. Charlton Doki reports for VOA from Juba.
During today's session, Justice James Alala Deng, head of the five-judge panel hearing the case, adjourned the trial of the four detainees until March 19th. Former SPLM Secretary General Pagan Amum Okech, former Security Minister Oyaideng Ajak, former Deputy Defense Minister Majak Dagot Atem, and former South Sudan envoy to the U.S. Ezekiel Lol Gatkoth are accused of trying to overthrow the government. Judge Alala demanded that the seven men released in Kenya also appear in the court on the 19th. They include former Cabinet Affairs Minister Deng Alor Kwol, former Roads and Bridges Minister Gier Chuang Aluong, and former Finance Minister Kosti Manibe Ngai. Before adjourning the trial, the prosecution and defense questioned police investigator Major General Jackson Elia, who said a December press release from Riek Machar and other SPLM leaders incited the army to take up arms against the government on December 15th. Lead defense lawyer Monyiluak Alor expressed satisfaction with today's proceedings.
We look forward now to have the prosecution witnesses one by one. There are about 13 of them, so we'll see whether they will all come. And in the course of time, we'll see if we have defense witnesses that we could invoke and bring to court. The defense witnesses will be worked out by the way the prosecution presented its case. So we are developing that.
A number of foreign lawyers were expected to join the defense team, but Alor says the government has not cleared them to take part in the trial.
The international lawyers, there are some of them, but they have not been accredited in the sense that their application has not been processed. So they are among the public. So there are observers among them that are legally competent and that would evaluate the process.
Security remained tight in and around the court premises, with one of the major roads leading to the venue completely shut down. Unlike yesterday, when hundreds of people stood outside the court, only a few dozen showed up today. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
East African leaders will meet in Ethiopia tomorrow to discuss the mandate and the size of a stabilization and protection force to be deployed in South Sudan. Mata Vonderwolf reports for VOA News from Addis Ababa.
Heads of state of the East African bloc IGAD, which has been mediating talks between South Sudan's warring sides, are now turning attention to troop deployment. Ethiopian Foreign Ministry spokesperson Dina Mufti says the extraordinary summit is devoted just to South Sudan.
They'll be talking about the deployment of forces to the region, which most of them have agreed, because there is going to be a deployment of the African brigades from all IGAD countries plus two other non-IGAD members, Burundi and Rwanda.
Other countries that have said they are ready to send troops to South Sudan are Ethiopia, Kenya, and Djibouti. The presence of Ugandan troops in the country from the beginning of the conflict has led to criticism by the opposition side and the international community that they are an obstacle to a peaceful solution. So Uganda's troop will slowly be withdrawn. Fighting broke out in South Sudan mid-December after a dispute within the ruling SPLM. A January ceasefire hasn't taken hold, so regional leaders are determining how best to reinforce the truce. Dina Mufti says they're looking at how many troops will be needed and the extent of their mandate.
This is a kind of peacekeeping force, so they are going to reinforce or realize the cessation of hostility. They will help in that process. They will help the monitors and the people who verify the cessation of hostilities or the ceasefire.
After IGAD heads of state decide on the mandate and the size of the force, the African Union and the United Nations will need to give approval before the force can actually be deployed. The conflict in South Sudan has killed thousands of people and displaced close to a million. To ensure the participation of the South Sudanese people in the peace process, a civil society conference will be held in Addis Ababa after the IGAD summit. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Dripping water taps, wastewater from washing, and rain can form pools of stagnant water where malaria-carrying mosquitoes and other parasites breed. But there are ways to minimize the risk. First, don't dispose of water in a low-lying area which doesn't drain naturally. If there's a stagnant pool near your living space, sweep the water aside. Then, in that spot, dig a hole at least a meter deep. Refill it with sand or gravel, which is porous and allows the water into the soil so a pool doesn't form there. To help protect you and your family from disease, do what you can to eliminate stagnant water.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a Truth and Reconciliation panel on human rights abuses is considered by Mali's new government. Stay tuned.
Tell us what's on your mind. Fridays on South Sudan in Focus. We read from your comments. You can reach us by email or text message.
Our email address is southsudan@voanews.com. Again, that's southsudan@voanews.com.
Or you can text message us. The number in South Sudan is 09555-84407. From outside South Sudan, you have to dial the international code followed by 211-9555-84407. Email or text message us. We want to know what is on your mind. Tune in on Fridays when we read from your comments.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how have political changes affected your daily life?
Political changes have changed my life totally. When someone walks and whenever people are gathered, the police will know that there is something bad and they'll put up security.
In fact, I can't call it political changes because in political change in South Sudan, nothing yet has been changed. Since we got independent, it was only one political party, the one ruling the country. If you don't go away with the rule, it's a problem. So political changes is not yet happening.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. The Malaysian military is backing away from reports that it tracked a missing passenger jet far away from its intended flight path, casting further doubt on the whereabouts of the plane and its 239 people on board. In a statement today, the Air Force chief said he could not rule out that the Malaysia Airlines jetliner veered drastically off course. But he said a media report that claimed the military tracked the jet over the Strait of Malacca was clearly an inaccurate and incorrect report. The Strait of Malacca is off the west coast of the Malaysia Peninsula and is hundreds of kilometers from where civilian air traffic controllers lost control with the Boeing 777. The initial search for the plane had focused mainly on the South China Sea, which is off the east coast. If the plane did make it to the Strait of Malacca, it would call into question theories that the jet experienced some sort of sudden catastrophic event shortly after takeoff that prevented pilots from communicating with authorities. U.S. President Barack Obama is hosting Ukraine's interim prime minister at the White House today as the standoff between Russia and the West over the Ukrainian region of Crimea continues. This is President Obama's first meeting with Prime Minister Arseniy Yatsenyuk and is meant to underscore U.S. support for the new government and the Ukrainian people. Mr. Yatsenyuk's visit to Washington comes as Crimea, with its majority Russian population, prepares for a Moscow-backed referendum Sunday on joining Russia. And finally, Hong Kong police say 9 people have been arrested in connection with a vicious attack on a former newspaper editor. Kevin Lau received serious wounds to his torso and legs after being attacked last month by a man with a meat cleaver. The police commissioner said today mainland authorities arrested 2 men, while Hong Kong police arrested 7 others. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
United Nations officials have repeatedly denied landmines were found among the arms shipments seized last week. The UN typically ships all weapons by air, and officials have acknowledged the mistake. Organizers of anti-UN rally earlier this week are skeptical. Mungume Devs Rakarinj has the story for VOA from Juba.
A short video posted on several local news sites identifies smaller canisters found in trucks as landmines. The UN does not sanction the use of landmines and denies the UNMISS convoy was carrying any landmines. UNMISS commander, Major General Delay Johnson Sachi, traveled to Rumbek earlier this week to verify the contents for himself.
The pictures that have been circulating on the internet claiming that landmines are among the cargo are not correct. The pictures shown, in fact, are crowd control equipment.
Sachi says all the containers held approved arms and ammunition destined for a Ghanaian peacekeeping force in Bentiu.
The weapons and ammunition found in Rumbek were never intended to serve any other purpose other than for peace and protection of civilians of South Sudan. They were not intended for the use of any other entity than for the new Ghanaian contingent, and they were not being transported clandestinely. This is also why we readily agreed to the inspection of the cargo at the checkpoint at Rumbek.
Ayuen Goet Roor says he does not believe Sachi. He was one of the organizers of a youth rally earlier this week, in which dozens of protesters chanted anti-UN messages and carried anti-UN banners.
We have actually lost hope on UNMISS leadership in South Sudan, because the role they are playing in this current crisis, their actual mandate is not clear to us up to now, I'm speaking. Because there's no way that you can deny it, thing that has got an evidence.
Ruru says, despite UN deniers, he believes the weapons were destined for anti-government troops. Chaplain Kara Yokuju, who teaches at Juba University's College of Peace and Development Studies, says even though what UNMISS says is undoubtedly true, they are failing to get their message out to people like Ruru.
UNMISS need to make its message, its presence in the Republic of South Sudan, very clear and to be understood by the citizens of the Republic of South Sudan. To my own opinion, UNMISS has not clearly done that.
UNMISS spokesperson Ariane Quintier says she is trying to change that.
That's something we're trying to do with the authorities of South Sudan, because we want to be able to work very closely with the authorities of South Sudan and to reestablish a climate of positive spirit and good faith.
Quintier says an official investigation into the shipment gets underway tomorrow. The results will be widely disseminated. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
Like South Sudan, Mali has had its share of human rights abuses that stem from communal fighting and is now trying to start the process of justice. Mali's National Assembly is expected to discuss the creation of a Truth, Justice and Reconciliation Commission this week. Human rights groups have expressed concern that the proposed commission will not have the necessary independence to make a difference. VOA's Anne Luke has more from our West Africa Bureau.
The new Mali is a work in progress. The crisis of 2012 and 2013 divided the country like never before, both literally and figuratively. A French-led military intervention may have physically reunited much of the country early last year, but communal divisions are far from healed. President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita says national reconciliation is a top priority. But first, Malians must figure out what exactly happened and why. This week, the National Assembly will debate the legal framework to create a commission to do just that. The proposed commission would have 3 years to explore crimes committed during this most recent crisis and during previous conflicts in the North. It would go back as far as independence in 1960. A previous commission created last year by the former interim government accomplished little. Its failings left Malians doubting the very idea. Human rights groups say this time the commission must be seen as impartial and representative. Attorney Mokhtar Mariko is head of the Malian Association for Human Rights.
Well, je crois qu'il faudrait d'abord définir le contenu du mandat de cette commission.
He says the mandate of the commission needs to be clearly spelled out, and the men and women who lead it cannot have been implicated in the crimes that were committed throughout the country. He says this commission must be truly independent. There is talk of attaching the commission to the relatively new Ministry of Reconciliation and Development for the North. Mariko says that's a bad idea, as it would open the commission up to political interference. The proposed commission would have 15 members and 7 working groups. International rights group Human Rights Watch says Malians should get a say in those appointed. The group says there should be a wide consultation with civil society, political parties, and other groups, along with public confirmation hearings. Human Rights Watch is also calling for the commission to have investigative powers that would allow it to refer cases to the criminal justice system and recommend reparations for victims. The proposed commission would be called the Truth, Justice, and Reconciliation Commission. Many Malians say that is exactly the order in which things must happen for this initiative to succeed. Truth, justice, then reconciliation. Anne Luk, VOA News, Dakar.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Panda Chol Bor by Panchol Deng.
Madi
We have been listening to Panchol Deng with the song Panchol Bor. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes or cars this evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Bye.